I'm Arun Vanigopal, in for Tanzina Vega. Good to be here with you. As the Senate impeachment trial begins, more evidence is emerging about President Trump's effort to pressure the government of Ukraine to pursue investigations that would help him politically. The president is no stranger to using his influence to seek favors. It's a strategy that is not out of the ordinary in the world where he made his fortune, New York real estate. My friend and colleague Andrea Bernstein has been documenting the world of corruption and favoritism in New York politics for decades as a reporter for WNYC. She's now the co-host of the podcast Trump Inc. from WNYC Studios and ProPublica, and author of the new book American Oligarchs, The Kushners, The Trumps, and The Marriage of Money and Power. I sat down with Andrea to talk about her book, and I began by asking her about the role of federal money in the early business ventures of both Fred Trump and Joseph Kushner.
Both Fred Trump and Joe Kushner, Jared Kushner's grandfather, were builders at a time in American history when the government was pouring money into housing in a variety of direct and indirect ways. So one of the things that it was doing was making federally backed loans much easier to get, which of course meant that the financing was unlocked and that people could get mortgages and build homes. The Federal Aid Highway Act was passed in the Eisenhower era, and this put $25 billion into highway construction. What that meant is that people could get to these suburban homes. So there were these huge federal programs that were stimulating housing growth that both the Trump and the Kushner families benefited from at a time in America where the social contract was very strong. Taxes were high, income inequality was relatively low, but the Trump family and the Kushner family, Joe Kushner's son and Fred Trump and his son Donald Trump, started to corrode that system from the inside by making massive political contributions in ways that they thought would help their business. And also in both families, we see this thread of tax evasion, of not paying back to the government that enabled these family businesses.
So let's talk about that. How exactly did both Fred and his son, Donald Trump, become so embedded in the political networks of New York?
So in the 1930s, Fred Trump was a sort of a one-off builder. He would build a house, and he would sell the house, and then he would build another house, and then sell the next house, and that was sort of how he kept his business going. But he wanted to scale it up. So he went into a Brooklyn courtroom where a bankruptcy court was handing out pieces of a bankrupt housing financing business, and he wanted to get a piece of it. And he realized at that moment that the way that you get a piece of business from a Brooklyn judge is by strengthening your political connections. That began a decades-long practice in the Trump family of going to political fundraisers, of hiring the people that were associated with these Democratic clubs, and of being able to influence politics on a massive scale in New York. Now, let me be clear. In New York, real estate is a shady business, and every real estate developer in New York understands that you have to play the political system. But the Trump family were outliers, and official after official and report after report pointed this out to me, that the Trump family pushed the system to an extreme and contributed to the overall breakup of a system, of a contract about how government should work.
So this is what's unusual. You're saying that what they're doing is different from what other developers were doing in terms of this contract. What do you mean?
So if a politician calls a real estate developer and says, please contribute, they will do that. Just kind of a rainy day fund. The Trump family was different. There were so many officials that I called in New York and I would say, do you know why Donald Trump gave this contribution? And they would say to me, oh, yes, I know, because he called me and told me. And he would say, I gave $20,000. Where is my permit, my bond backing, my regulatory relief, many things that he wanted? So it was very, very clear that this was a different sort of transactional and extremely transactional politics that the Trump family practiced
in New York. This wasn't hint-hint, this was A to B.
Exactly, exactly. And that's what made it different, because it is largely hint-hint. Everybody understands it. Nobody ever says, I am expecting this particular benefit for my large contribution.
Both these men, Fred Trump and Joseph Kushner, an immigrant, not just an immigrant, a Holocaust survivor, they come here, they benefit from this post-war era, lots of government money being pumped into development that they benefit from. But it's actually, you're saying, this aspect of undermining the government that they both also practice, and which in some ways they come to, or at least Donald Trump in many ways, comes to, I guess, seize upon as the problem with America is government.
Right. So you get to this point in the middle of the last century where the Trump family and the Kushner family were establishing themselves. And it's actually a sort of high point of wealth equality in America for a variety of reasons. But that produced a backlash. So very wealthy people began pouring money into the political system to both lower taxes and to undo campaign finance regulations. And the apotheosis of this was the Citizens United decision in 2010, which really obliterated to a large degree almost all campaign finance disclosure regulations. And that was the backdrop for Donald Trump coming into power, both his own abuses of funneling money into politics, but also benefiting from a system that had been broken by wealthy billionaires who really did not want there to be any regulations. And Donald Trump just sort of walked right into that and took advantage of that in his 2016 campaign.
In 2010, as you mentioned, Citizens United happened, played this huge role in the 2010 midterm elections. You yourself were doing political reporting for WNYC and The Takeaway at that time. And you went to Stark County, Ohio, which was a hotly contested congressional district at the time. We have a clip of your conversation with the Democratic congressman at the time, John Bocchieri, about the changes he was seeing in those midterms. Here's what he said.
Folks are uneasy, they're uncertain, they're concerned about the economic mess that we just came through, and they're being made more anxious, quite frankly, by the special interest groups that are out there spending money to confuse people, disorient them, and that's been the most tragic part of this.
So tell us, who were some of the special interest groups you were seeing on the ground in Ohio at the time?
So that was such an interesting political reporting trip for me. Really a turning point in my understanding of money in American politics. And in fact, I write about that particular reporting trip in my book. So this was 2 years after Obama was elected. And Obama was elected and it's all hope and change. Then I go back in 2 years and everybody's mad and everybody's angry at government. And I'm wondering what could have happened. And I'm sitting in my hotel room, actually, working on preparing my segment for Takeaway, and I start seeing all these political ads. And the message is, government is bad. Government is horrible. Government is your enemy. Constantly, all day. And as I am traveling around the country in that political season, I see that it is everywhere. These ads are flooding the system in a way that they never had before. And that's what Citizens United unleashed. So if you are playing ads 24/7 that say to people, government is terrible, government is the root of all of our problems, it's no wonder that when you have an election and you say to people, is government bad? They're going to say, yeah, government's terrible. It's the root of all of our problems, because that is all that they are hearing.
How was Trump able to exploit that message on the campaign trail?
He completely capitalized on that sense of grievance in a whole variety of ways. One is through his well-known message of us and them. So he would divide people. He announced his Muslim ban. He would speak out against immigrants. But there was also a way in which he would say to people, they're out to get you. They're not working in your interest, meaning Washington. I'm going to upend that. I am going to change the system. I am going to drain the swamp. One of the big applause lines in his speeches during 2016. Of course, now what has happened is we're seeing unprecedented levels of money coming into both the Trump campaign and also to pay President Trump directly. We see it every day at his hotel where foreign leaders, businessmen, companies seeking mergers show up ostentatiously at his hotel so that President Trump knows that these people are paying him directly, paying his business directly, from which he's still profiting. So the floodgates are lifted and the money is pouring in.
But if the president isn't really doing much to lift up white working class voters, why are they still sticking by him?
What we've seen is an unprecedented assault on the truth. And there is no hearth where America gathers. There are so few trusted sources of local news. There's such a split, and the stories that people are hearing are so different. So if you are a Trump supporter and you watch Fox News and you follow the president's Twitter stream, you're getting one view of America, a view that the Washington Post has just pointed out consists of 16,000 lies and misrepresentations since Trump took office. 16,000. We're at the level of 30 a day. So where you have this ongoing assault on the truth, it becomes very easy to argue to people that they're living in an alternate reality.
But finally, if people in Stark County, Ohio, white working class voters who are so valorized in the political discourse, if they've had 3-4 years of a presidency like this, what does it say about how they value economic concerns versus maintaining their place in the racial hierarchy?
Well, I think that it's an incredibly complicated story. And I think one of the reasons why it's incredibly complicated, and one of the things I really try to show in my book, is this did not start with Trump. Economic inequality and destruction of the social contract started decades ago. Democratic and Republican presidents have participated in these systems. And when I say that I am looking at choices we made as a nation, I'm looking at all of the choices. I'm looking at the things that Bill Clinton did when he was president, the trade agreements that he sponsored, the Welfare Reform Act that he sponsored. There were all kinds of ways in which working class people of all races were not served by governments over the decades. And that created a very fertile ground for Donald Trump to walk in and say to people, you've been betrayed, because that was their experience. What I think is unusual about Trump is the degree in which there is a divorce between what he's promising and what he's actually doing.
Andrea Bernstein is co-host of the WNYC podcast Trump Inc. and author of the new book American Oligarchs, The Kushners, The Trumps, and The Marriage of Money and Power. Thank you so much for joining me today, Andrea.
Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.